Hey everyone, it's Tom Kradza, and on this episode of the Your Life, Your Term show, I sit down with Emma Apatow. It's actually Dr. Emma Apatow, and we get her to explain the doctor in her name. When you get into this podcast, you'll learn why there's a doctor at the front of her name. And she's a really interesting story. She is a professor in the public health area, both in Florida and here in Ontario. She'll explain that journey as we get started. And it was Greg Foss at the last Canadian Bitcoiners conference, Canadian Bitcoin conference in Toronto last year. Where Greg introduced us, and Emma was in the middle of creating some new content, and you can see she was searching on how she was going to enter the Bitcoin space herself and make an impact, and she has done that. So wait till you hear what she's done in the last year. And she comes at the topic of Bitcoin from this public health angle that I am super excited that we have people now in this space talking in this area. So I think you're going to enjoy this conversation with Emma. We get into all these different things, her background and where her journey is likely going to take her next. So enjoy this particular episode. And listen, if you are listening to this and you want to dive into the world of real estate investing and Bitcoin and how to live life on your terms, something we've been running for 15 years is a membership called the Rockstar Inner Circle. And in that membership, we go through not only real estate investing, but we introduce concepts of how central banking works, how inflation works, how the debasement of money works, how we need to invest our money and our time to outpace this debasement. We cover topics like Bitcoin, your personal mindset. We have about 20 classes that we run here at Rockstar in all these different areas. And we have two large events that we run every year where we dive into these with special guest speakers. So this is something we've been running for a long time. The Rockstar Inner Circle membership is a great group of people. As part of that membership, you get to meet all these wonderful Canadians who are participating in this. If you want to check out more, visit rockstarinnercircle.com/members for all the details. So that's rockstarinnercircle.com/members. If you hit that website, there should be a link where you can get all the details of how the membership works. So that's where you can check out all the details of the Rockstar Inner Circle membership. That's enough with this intro. Let's get on with the show.
Are you ready to live life on your terms? Is it time to take charge? Real estate, business building, the economy, health and nutrition, and more. It's the Your Life, Your Term show with Tom and Nick Kradza. Are you ready? Let's go.
All right, we are with Dr. Emma Apatow. So thank you for doing this. I thought Dr. Emma, I'll refer to you as Emma, but I like Dr. Emma for the beginning of this, was going to walk into the office here. And I was waiting for you know, the introduction here and to meet in person, but you're in Costa Rica right now. So I was way off. So here we are doing this over Zoom. So thank you for doing this. And let's just start. Why is it Dr. Emma? Give us the story.
Yes. Well, first, thank you so much, Tom, for inviting me to be on this podcast. Why is it Dr. Emma? I have an applied doctorate, a DRPH, in public health. And that degree is meant for people who are interested in leadership positions in public health. So, for example, working at a health unit at a leadership level, or running maybe a social nonprofit, for example. I was always attracted to kind of the application of social science sciences to real world problems. And definitely with a PhD, you get that research training and you hone in on one problem. But I tend to be kind of this generalist that likes a little bit of everything. And so the DRPH really appealed to me.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. And I can't remember exactly how we met. I know it was the Canadian Bitcoin conference last year. I feel like it was Greg Foss like telling me I had to meet you or something. I can't, because Greg is a whirlwind of energy. So like when he's making introductions, like sometimes I don't even know what's going on. You know, he introduced me to a bunch of people in Miami once, and it was just like this hurricane of introductions happening. So I think that was the connection. Was it Greg?
It was okay. Greg. And I actually, when I came to that conference, I was looking for community because, as you know, when you go down the Bitcoin rabbit hole and you discover the things that you do and your mental models are shifted, and you try to talk to other people, they're like, what are you talking about? Why are you so passionate? So I felt very alienated prior to the conference. So it was so great walking there. And I remember I was going to a session at the conference, and Greg was like walking my way to enter, I think, a doorway. And I'm like, are you Greg Foss? He's like, yes, I am. And we chatted, and I told him, you know, I was in education and all of that. And he got really excited. And he's like, you have to meet Tom, and there's other people. It was fantastic meeting him. I met him and just so many other people in the Bitcoin space. And it's just amazing to see how warm and receptive the Bitcoin community is.
Yeah, cool. And so your story is interesting to me because I don't meet a lot of Bitcoiners who come from, I don't know if academia is the right word, or kind of with your background. So like, how did you trip into this rabbit hole? What is your journey? How did you get here? How did you discover Bitcoin and start going into this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as I mentioned, I kind of have this interdisciplinary interest of, I would say, the world in general. Particularly, I really love like the social sciences, kind of health sciences and education. And so I've been a professor for the past 10 years. Most recently, I hold a position at McMaster University in the Department of Health Research Methods, Evidence and Impact. Prior to now, I was the director of a Master of Public Health program, squarely mostly focused on educational administration, making sure students have placements, making sure that the curriculum is up to date, coordinating courses. So that's what I did. And I was doing this while the pandemic hit. And, you know, as you probably know that being in leadership position sometimes is a very lonely space, and everyone's like looking to you for answers, like, what are we going to do next? And, you know, in-person classes were shut down. You know, administration at the higher level was kind of making decisions at the fly, also waiting for decisions from, you know, the central university and so forth. So with all this uncertainty, I just started thinking more about just life in general and looking at what was happening in Canada particularly, and comparing it to the United States. Because prior to being at McMaster, as a professor at the University of North Florida, and also my husband is an American as well.
Oh, got it. I didn't know that. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And so we actually, during the pandemic, went back, and we went to Florida, and it was very interesting, I think around 2021. And life there was just a lot more open.
Yeah.
People, a lot of folks not, you know, wearing masks and so forth. And I got into some really deep conversations with people around their perspectives of the pandemic. And, you know, I spoke to people that were kind of on both camps, you know, kind of for, against kind of these mandates and all of those things. And I just realized, like, you know, people on both sides had very strong arguments. And I just wanted to make sure that I was not kind of being biased to listen to one narrative. Admittedly, I probably was coming from the Canadian context. And so it just made me think about, okay, what is public health again? And it made me realize that public health is about individuals and the things that individuals do in society. Individuals form organizations, they create policies, they do all of these things, right? But I think what can really happen sometimes is we can get lost into the collective mindset of protecting the collective health. Well, to me personally, I don't think there's a collective health, but there's a group of individuals that have health. They all will have individual needs and protections needed. And so just kind of rethinking about that. And there's long debates about individual rights, for example, in public health. You have great ethical debates against utilitarianism and so forth. And so as I was thinking about that, and actually I traveled back, as I mentioned, visited the States, and I traveled back home. I actually was by myself. And it actually happened to be around New Year's. And that's a time where I, like myself, like a lot of people like to think about New Year's resolutions and things like that. I'm really interested in personal development, specifically when it comes to like career and specifically career growth and so forth. And I just started watching some YouTube videos and found this professional development guru from the UK, and he started talking about crypto. And I was like, oh, okay, this seems interesting. You can kind of be your own bank. You can make interest on your money and all that stuff. So like many people, I got enamored with, you know, the bells and whistles of the altcoins. But then going down deeper, and you read more like Saifedean Ammous Fiat Standard, and you really understand that Bitcoin really is the first cryptocurrency and really the one that solves the problem of broken or debt-based money, then that's really the one that should have all the attention. And so I personally then just started saying, oh my gosh, Bitcoin is it? And Bitcoin is such a base layer, or could be such a base layer for public health. And I could talk more about that a bit more if you'd like.
Yeah, can you? Because that's probably an angle of Bitcoin that I don't really think about. I don't think about it as a base layer of public health. I haven't thought about it. I think it fixes a lot of things, including health. So I don't know if that's the angle that you're coming at this from. But yeah, talk to me about that for sure. I'd love to know more.
Yeah. So I mentioned that I have an applied doctorate, and my specific specialization there is health education, essentially health promotion. And one of the prevailing models that we have in health promotion is the health impact pyramid. And I write about this in an article that was recently published in Bitcoin Magazine. And essentially, in this pyramid, there are five levels, and at the base is socioeconomic status. And you move up to essentially like the environment, these longer protective action things that you can do to save or protect years or loss of life or morbidity, for example. So something like a colonoscopy, you can go in for a colonoscopy, and that can save, you know, multiple years of your life, like from cancer, for example. And then you can move up this pyramid all the way up to the fifth, the small little triangle at the top of the pyramid, to counseling and education. And this has the least amount of impact on population health. So it's really that base, that social economic layer where you can make the most difference. And in public health, we have picked up this, or I should say, we picked up momentum around addressing the social determinants of health. One of my colleagues, Scott Wolf, who's actually executive director of the Bitcoin Coalition of Canada, he's worked in the health space for many years, writes a beautiful article around just calling people to further move upstream the social determinants of health, and think about Bitcoin that could address a lot of these social determinants and this base layer. A lot of times we talk about you need to make more income, right? You need to invest in assets. And I think on a previous podcast, you had someone talk about how real estate is capturing the monetary premium in some regards, right? Because people are looking for a place to store their value and their worth. And so, but the thing that we don't do in public health, I think enough of, is actually thinking about what is money. And if that is broken, right? Lynn Alden, as we know, talks about that beautifully in her book. Maybe we should be looking at a new parallel monetary system that can address that base layer.
Do you know how happy it makes me to hear you speak this way? Like, this is so needed. Like, this is the way. Like, what you're talking about right now to me is the base layer of how we, it just gives every, it's public health, and it gives everybody a better psychological outlook on life. Like, yes. if everybody in the community, sorry, I don't mean to speak. And now you just got me all excited here, because I'm like, yes, like, this is clearly the way. Like, if we can have another system where people say, oh my gosh, in this system, I have some hope. I have hope that I can get ahead. Like, I'll never forget leaving university. Now, I guess I was the classic middle class. Like, our family definitely had the ups and downs, but through the ups and downs, I was probably always tossed around the middle class. And even, you know, growing up in Mississauga on the west side of Toronto and coming out of that and going to university and then getting a job, you just kind of look around, you're like, oh my gosh, like, I'm never going to get out of this. Like, this is my life forever. I'm going to get some debt. I'll be able to get back then, you know, I'm 51 years old now. I could get a house. So I could get a house, but the mortgage on this, with the income I'm earning from this job, I'm basically debt trapped now. So now my life is just going back and forth to work, paying my bills, hopefully having enough for education, for vacation. Got to save up. If I have kids, I hopefully can save up enough for education. It just becomes this weird treadmill. And psychologically, it's just a burden. Like, you don't feel like you're living. Mm-hmm. And that's me coming out of what I would call a middle-class existence. Right. So I think what you're saying is, like, so huge is, when you came to this realization, like, you, I guess you just must've had some jaw dropping moments, no, like, for yourself.
I did. And it, oh my goodness, it revealed many things as well. Like, if I'm not mistaken, I think, is it your family, came from, was it Europe or?
My father's, our father is Croatian, our mother Scottish. Okay. And yeah, they both came as immigrants. My dad on a boat, and mm-hmm. then and my mom was able to come on a plane. So yeah, both immigrants to Canada, and then we were born here. Yeah.
Yeah, my parents too. And I know a lot of Canadians, Torontonians, Ontarians are immigrants, or, you know, second generation. And I think, you know, one big thing is, as we know, many immigrants come with this very hard work ethic, or strong work ethic rather. And, you know, growing up, seeing my parents work very, very hard. My mother was a nurse. My father, for a good part of his career, worked at York University, was in computer support. And just seeing them work so hard, and I would say, you know, we were probably middle class as well. And you could see kind of that treadmill that they were on, right? And like, I took that very seriously, because my parents invested so much in me. They moved to this, you know, Canada, a great country, so that I can have better opportunity. And so I come with this whole, I would say, heart to, you know, to help them in a way, to show them that, you know, there is this better way, and that your daughter does indeed have a better future. And I think that could also be other people's revelation as well too, especially the younger generation, to kind of come and think about, do I have to do the same things my parents did? Like, maybe carry those wonderful traits that your parents had, or the previous generations, but think about the models in which we are living in, right? Are they correct? Are they broken? You know, admittedly, the world seems so chaotic today. And I would argue that a lot of that comes from broken incentives, broken money, right? Jeff Booth talks about this beautifully, you know, in a lot of his talks. And I just hope that more people are able to start questioning, you know, the systems in which we are in.
Mm-hmm. When you share some, I agree with all of what you're saying, obviously. When you explain some of this to some, Have you had any colleagues that you've tried to explain this to? Or like, could you just imagine the reaction? Like, just people looking at you like, oh, wow, I knew Emma was crazy. Like, this is certifiable now, you know? Like, have you tried to like articulate some of these concepts outside of the Bitcoin community? Or is that just too difficult at this point?
Yeah, I definitely have. And a recent piece that I worked on with a student at McMaster was a scoping review. It's essentially a literature review of the peer-reviewed literature to see how Bitcoin has been used previously. And I will say that the literature really hasn't kept up with the real-world use cases. You know, Alex Gladstein talks wonderfully about all of the humanitarian use cases for Bitcoin. But in the literature, based on our criteria that we use, we see that people use it as a savings and as an investments tool, a little bit of payments. And so I worked on that review to kind of add to the literature and hopefully get colleagues to kind of see. And we also report on El Salvador as a country that has made Bitcoin legal tender, because a lot of people don't know that. So that's been one way in which I've tried to approach people with the idea of Bitcoin in the academic space. Oftentimes, though, I will say that a lot of people just think, why are you focusing on that? Because especially I'll say right now in academia, there's a lot of push on the social determinants that I talked about, you know, the things like education, housing is a big thing. Like, there's a lot of focus on these areas in the research arm of education, but there's also a lot of, I would say, DEI activity that's happening as well. And a lot of people are rallying around that, which I think to an extent makes sense, but we need to make sure, like Thomas Sowell, I'm not sure if you've read any of his work. Absolutely. I was just thinking to myself, is this like, why did I not know about him sooner? But he's probably one of the best, or I would say decorated economists in the United States, who kind of talks about these things about, for example, discrimination. So there's a lot of talk around, like, we need to, you know, rectify the wrongs of the past and all of these things. And Thomas Sowell really looks at these things objectively and says, like, yes, there are going to probably be some natural differences. Outcomes are not always going to be equal, but we can strive to create an even playing field so everyone can actualize what they are meant to fulfill in their lives. But in the academic institutions and a lot of them, there is this great push towards DEI. And as I said, I think there might be some benefit to it, but then we need to question if it goes to extremes.
I like how you're covering yourself there, Emma. I like how you're covering yourself. Yeah. There's something to it, but I want you to also look at this. It's good.
I think a lot of people are kind of like really going along with kind of the mainstream narratives without just, you know, making sure that we're not moving too far. And so it's hard to penetrate the idea of Bitcoin when people are moved by some of these greater mainstream narratives.
Okay, so then because I want to ask more about your background, because you're really interesting to me. You know, just hearing what you've gone through to come to these conclusions is like blowing my mind. It also makes me think that this whole Bitcoin thing, whatever we want to call it, is spreading now to just a different level. And what I mean by that is, if someone like yourself is now entertaining the possibility that Bitcoin could introduce some benefits to society from your vantage point, I feel like I didn't hear that 4 years ago. Like, I didn't just 4 years ago, I didn't hear that kind of thing. It was just like, hey, it's this economic thing and the number go up and, you know, maybe store a value. But now you're talking about it at a really cool level here, which to me personally, I've always thought we would get to this kind of discussion. So this is really exciting for me personally. But so that people can hear it from you, what, and if they're new to this, what do you mean exactly? Is it that like inflation and a debt-based money just kind of like traps people? And I don't want to put words in your mouth, so please just explain. And that Bitcoin just gives them a different opportunity in the world. Is that what you're talking about? Can you explain that for anyone listening who hasn't read your stuff?
Yeah, sure. So if I may answer this question through a health promotion lens, there is this framework called the health belief model. We use this model to help to develop promotion programs, let's say smoking cessation. Like, I think at this time and age, we know that smoking is associated with a number of, poor health outcomes. And so let's say we wanted to create a program around promoting Bitcoin using a health belief model. Okay. There's several constructs or factors that will affect the extent to which someone will actually arrive at concluding that I need Bitcoin. Okay. And so I think the thing is maybe I think because, for example, inflation is the causes of it is insidious and it's hard to pinpoint. Like, we could tell things are getting very expensive in life. And so, but, and people might feel like, oh, there's not maybe a lot that I can do. And so I think people might, and if I go through some of the constructs, so for example, self-efficacy is a construct of the health belief model. And so if people feel like they can't, they don't have the agency to do something, they're not going to do anything, right? Or if they don't have the basic knowledge that Bitcoin is something that can provide kind of a lifeboat from inflation, if people don't see that, and if they feel they don't have the self-efficacy, then they're not going to go through. And then also the perceived barriers as well too, right? Like, oh, that Bitcoin thing is just too complicated to understand. Also, as you know, messaging about Bitcoin is so confounded. In the news we hear it referred to as crypto when really it should be separated as its own, thing, own monetary tool. So I think there's the mainstream that creates a barrier to understanding. And then another construct is perceived benefits, right? So again, if you don't understand what Bitcoin is, you're not going to know that can help you face inflation or currency devaluation, which is happening in many countries around the world. And thus, if you don't understand these things, and you may not have the motivation, right? Again, and if again, you may not, for us, like, being in the West, you feel inflation, but it's not as bad as someone in Nigeria, for example, right? Or Ghana or Venezuela or
It's getting pretty
wherever.
bad. It's getting pretty bad. Let's face it. But yes, but
It is
I know your
indeed.
point. I am agreeing with your point 100%. Yes.
Right? And then all of this is shaped by your demographic variables, right? Like, so where you may fit on the socioeconomic ladder, right? Your class, like, so maybe if you're really high income, you may feel like, oh no, I'm still doing okay. But you might be like, maybe your rental properties, for example, you're noticing that you're having such high turnover rates because your renters are not able to, pay their rent. And then also another thing is gender. As we can see in the Bitcoin space, there are women in the Bitcoin space, but I think that potentially just from like just a natural maybe selection point of view, women maybe tend to I don't want to say not interested in finance because we definitely are, but I think it's that natural instinct in a man to go forward and find that new economic thing that's going to, support their family. And then there's
I will
also
save the
age.
family. I will save the family. This is my duty. I must save the family. I found the thing that will save the family. Yes. Yeah, maybe it is that,
Yes.
something like that. You're right.
And then there's also age as well too. So, maybe if you are a boomer, let's say, you'll be less likely to realize that you need Bitcoin, for
For sure.
example. There's definitely boomers in this space that get it, which is great. So these are social kind of demographic variables that kind of confound a person's kind of thinking towards Bitcoin. And obviously too, there's their thinking themselves, there's the psychology that they have as well might stop them from realizing, Bitcoin is this great monetary tool that can help them with inflation, for example. And then there's also cues to action. So another thing, right now, especially, I guess we can speak specifically Ontario, there's not really a lot of places where we can pay for, with Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. It's not really a subject that's taught in schools. We don't really hear it in the news. If we do, it's about some scam or something like that. And so that will minimize a person's cue to action. Be like, no, I'm not going to do that.
Not for me. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think kind of walking through this model kind of shows that depending on where people are with all of these various constructs will impact the way in which they would perceive the need for Bitcoin to, let's say, in this case, maybe fight against inflation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's all so great what you're sharing. It's just making me think about so much stuff. And sometimes I think the current system just forces people to have so little time because they're so busy trying to survive in this system. Like I kind of look at it like, people are running on a treadmill and they don't know it. They see the numbers on the treadmill and maybe their account balance is the same or slightly going up, but they don't realize they're running harder and harder because the debasement's coming at them so fast, and then they just don't have time because they're trying to survive on this treadmill. So you don't have time to kind of take a breath and look around at what's going on. And I didn't really, I was so into this real estate thing until 2020. I didn't really stop. And, I kind of knew about gold. I was a gold bug already, knew about real estate, but I had dismissed all of this Bitcoin stuff until I really sat and spent hours diving into it. But on your point about women in this community, I'll tell you just something I've noticed running this podcast is some people will come up to me and say, "Hey, Tom, you need more women on the podcast. You need more women." I'm like, "Well, we don't have this policy not to have more women." So then these three women who approached me and told me this, it was at this conference that we were at, all have done incredible things in real estate. These three women, each of them independently, incredible stuff. So I said, "Well, why don't you three come on the podcast?" And you know what they said? "Oh my gosh, no, we could never come on the podcast. What would we share? We have nothing to share." Whereas I think guys are naturally more like, "I will come on the podcast. Oh yeah, I know everything. I know everything. I will save the world. I will just..." Where women just have this, and I don't mean to generalize like this, but just naturally maybe a little bit more humble, a little bit more don't need to be out there. So I think what you're doing, so thank you for coming on this and sharing your perspective. I think it's just very needed. So I really appreciate you coming on here and sharing your message from your context and your point of view, because I think it's really beneficial. And when someone like Lynn Alden is doing what she's doing, these are strong voices. Mm-hmm. So, just thank you for having the courage. I don't know if it's courage. I don't know what the right thing to say is, that just having, just doing what you're doing.
Thank you. And maybe for, that lady that might be on the edge to actually share and come out, in the Bitcoin space, if you will, right now in this podcast, I'm just thinking of this as a conversation between you and I. That's cool. I enjoy talking to you. So that might help a lady out there who is just thinking, should I, share my voice? Yes, we need to hear your voice.
And you should know there are some educators in the school system who listen to this podcast and are slowly, these concepts are slowly entering the school in maybe unofficial capacity. I know several teachers who know of these things, and it's kind of infiltrating into the school system here in Ontario, whether the school system wants it to or not, these concepts are slowly getting in there. So where did you have the tipping point that you've decided? Because now it seems to me that you're deciding to spend a lot of time in this area. What was that like for you? Was that just a natural progression, or was that a big decision? I'm gonna really dedicate some, because you're dedicating the most precious asset we all have, time, into this. So what was that decision making like? And can you tell us what you're up to and what you're doing right now?
Yeah, I would admittedly say the decision making was quite difficult, because, after realizing the potential of Bitcoin and wanting to contribute my voice, it it means I had to step away to some extent from a career that I've like built up for a significant part of my life. What's great is I'm still, you know, I still have an appointment at the university. I should also say what I'm expressing here doesn't represent the views of McMaster University. But for me personally, yeah, I knew I had to step away, and I just took some time to kind of think, like, what could I do in the Bitcoin space? And I think one clear thing is education, given that's something that, you know, I've been doing for some time. And then I started, you know, just brainstorming ideas around kind of what that could look like. I also took a life coaching certificate. Because I thought that would be an interesting way, because one of the things I really loved about being a professor is the coaching aspect of working with like young minds or folks that are looking for a second career or looking to further their careers. And through that, you get into these like life conversations. So I took that course. So I started kind of building a skill set to add on kind of what I already had. And so I knew I wanted to do something with education. I knew I wanted to do something with coaching. And so the idea one day came, like Dream Grad Academy. And I think when we met, I might have kind of described like, oh yes, I'm starting to move this idea of Dream Grad Academy forward.
Yeah.
And I said, stay tuned. And you were so kind to say, I'll invite you on the podcast when you've kind of fleshed out the idea. And so Dream Grad Academy has now emerged to be an educational platform and consultancy where I work with individuals and organizations on Bitcoin education. And, you know, through Bitcoin, you're kind of talking about life as well, because Bitcoin is such a foundational truth. Like once people realize it, it impacts like many dimensions of life. So yeah, I work with coaching people one-on-one around kind of their Bitcoin journey. And also I'm launching a course for women in the future. I hope it could be for all adults. So it's a 4 weeks online course called Bitcoin Problem-Based Learning, where you can learn about the basics of Bitcoin. You don't need any prior knowledge. The course is $150 plus applicable taxes. And we'll have some live sessions as well. You'll also interact with educational materials that I've curated. Because as you know, going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, there's just so many different like resources. And you're like, is this credible? Is this not? So I try to put that all together and save people like hundreds of hours. So I'm launching that course, starts May 30th. Enrollment is live right now. So if there's any women who are interested in enrolling, please check out dreamgradacademy.com. Another interesting thing that Dream Grad Academy does is partner with organizations, as I mentioned. And most recently, I'm currently working with Bitcoin Mentor IO as one of their mentors. And Bitcoin Mentor is all about helping people along their Bitcoin journey, no matter where they are, but specifically helping those people that have bought Bitcoin and left it on exchange. And we all know Bitcoin's all about self-sovereignty. And so we help people to walk that journey to become as sovereign as they wish. And so I'm one of the mentors, as I mentioned. So I help to coach people through that. And Bitcoin Mentor was really cool, is headed by BTC Sessions, who is one of the premier Bitcoin educators in the space. And Mike Cook.
He's been on our podcast twice. Just so you know, over the last few years, Ben's been on. And he's the best. Like, his YouTube videos are absolutely top notch. So that's cool that you're partnered with them. That's really cool.
Yeah. And
but you will through that organization, then you'll hop on a Zoom or a phone with someone and just walk them through, because we do have some clients who are, you know, 55, 60 years old, and they want to get into Bitcoin, and they, you know, I confuse them when I say hot wallet, cold wallet, you know, and all these kinds of things. They don't understand what is going on, keys, custody, like all this kind of stuff that I now take for granted, you know? So you will get on and guide somebody through that process and help them get a hardware wallet set up if they want to take custody of the Bitcoin themselves and that kind of thing. That's what you'll do.
Exactly.
Okay.
So exactly. We'll demystify kind of all of that for you. We also work on multi-signature solutions. There's a whole roster of amazing mentors waiting, and they all have different backgrounds, some very strong technical skills, some like myself, who comes from more of the social sciences. So Bitcoin Mentor, again, just launched on Bitcoin's halving. So what is that, last Friday?
Oh, wow. Awesome. So cool.
Yeah. So that's a really cool thing that I'm excited about, to be part of the Bitcoin Mentor team. I also should highlight, Mike Cook is the managing partner of Bitcoin Mentor. And he has a wealth of experience building businesses, and has been in Bitcoin for some time now. So, that's a really interesting endeavor. So if people are looking for support in their Bitcoin journey, consider Bitcoin Mentor.
Keep going. Yes.
Oh, and were you going to ask what the website was for that? Or?
Yeah, the website, and what else? Because I think you're up to so much. Like, I think there's more I wanted to ask you about. But yeah, what is the website for that? Yes, the Bitcoin Mentor.
The website for that is bitcoinmentor.io. And it's a great website. You could see all of the package listings there, services. So you can find that there. Another thing that I'm involved with is Bitcoin is Better. This is a very new nonprofit starting in the States. It's headed by Daniel Hirschberger. He's actually a real estate investor. He wrote a book, Bitcoin is Better. And he's actually walking the walk now, creating this nonprofit to help the middle class achieve financial independence. And so, as I said, it's a new nonprofit, so we're still working out things, but we are looking for volunteers. So, Bitcoin is Better. You can look that up if you're maybe orange pilled already and you're looking for a way to get involved. Because I know for myself, for example, when I met you at the conference, I was looking to get into this space. Mm-hmm. And as you know, Bitcoin, proof of work is a huge thing, right? You need to show kind of that you're building something, that you're knowledgeable. And so that was what I was doing as I was trying to kind of like transition. So I had this idea of DreamGrad Academy, working on the website, just connecting with people as well. And I think just naturally, just things have just emerged where I'm now involved these activities. Yes.
Emma, this is amazing. Sorry, keep going. What's next?
Thank you. And so there's also the Bitcoin Coalition of Canada. This is really exciting. It is.
Yeah, tell me more about it, because I think I follow Scott now on Twitter, but I don't really know what's going on. But I feel very supportive of it just because of the name. But yeah, tell us more. Yeah, what's going on?
Yeah, again, this is newly formed. You could just Google Bitcoin Coalition Canada and you'll find the website. I believe it was formed in 2023 to really move the needle on education, kind of advocacy and policy. And we're trying to get a range of voices and people involved to really spread this awareness around what Bitcoin is. And this means like supporting local meetups. So for example, Scott and myself and Gabe from Bitcoin Advisors, for example, and many other people are part of the Toronto Bitcoin Collaborative. And we've just started that, but the coalition hopes to support kind of these local movements and also spread awareness among policymakers as well too, right? They need to understand what Bitcoin is. So hopefully we can build that brighter,
you're a better person
future.
Than I am. You're a better person than I am working with policy. You're a better person. We need you out there, but you're a that's a tall order. That is a tall order. So I admire that you are doing that. That's wonderful. Wow. Okay. And what else? Is there more to share that you're up to? That's a lot. Is there more? There is more. No.
I would say
that covers everything for now.
That's all I would like to highlight for now.
Okay. So then something I want to ask you, just circling back to the kind of the public health thing, just one or two more questions on that. What do you envision, like what specifically would you say in an area like Toronto or for somebody growing up in Toronto now, what specifically could Bitcoin change for their future? Like if you look forward 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, could you give anyone listening to this saying, well, Emma, yeah, public health, I kind of hear it, but like, what specifically is it? Is it that somebody growing up in Toronto can save and then have, you know, some real financial net worth when they're older and that gives them kind of hope so that they don't feel like lost in life? Is it something like that? Or is there some specific conditions that you're talking about? Is it all of it? Can you just dive into that a little bit more? I'm just super curious.
Yeah, so I really like, as you know, Bitcoin can be described as many things, like, you know, Bitcoin is speech, Bitcoin is code, Bitcoin is energy. Using that energy analogy, and I think that's Michael Saylor who's really popularized that and really makes sense. Bitcoin helps to truly save your energy for the future, right? Right now with fiat money, your money is being devalued. Right. And so as someone growing up in Toronto and is trying to save and buy that $1 million house, you know, essentially you may not ever get there. Mm-hmm. Right. If you're saving in the traditional sense, Bitcoin appreciates over the long term. Right. So Bitcoin can help you save for the future to then buy, you know, that house of your dreams, establish that family to help give you that peace of mind. And I think all of these things contribute to health. They're all factors related to health. And I think just trying to understand what Bitcoin is, I think it's so important for someone growing up in Toronto to realize Bitcoin's potential. I think particularly in Toronto's case right now, as a savings tool, right? Mm-hmm. As a savings mechanism. Like there's some people around the world have to figure out how to beat hyperinflation the register, right? Yeah. Buying bread, for example.
But you're right. I love what you're saying. Like I love what you're saying here because like right now, I feel people who are starting to open up to Bitcoin look at it like this, like, well, Tom, Emma, sounds good, but I have $200 extra. So like if I get $200 and buy $200 worth of Bitcoin today, if it goes up to $400, oh, wow, like big deal, you know, like that's doubled, but I'm really not getting ahead. And some people, unfortunately, are dismissing it because of that type of thinking. And what I love about what you are doing is you're educating people where I think this education compounds over the next few years. And people will begin to accept that if at the very beginning of their work lives or work careers or as children, they save in Bitcoin. Now we're not talking about an extra $200 that you put in and you hope it doubles in some amount of time. Now the base layer of your energy and of your future, as you've described, is in this store of value, the savings technology, that then if you just keep it there year after year, it's volatile as heck. We know that. But the compound annual growth rate of Bitcoin, if you just look at it like that, like over the last 4 years, just from January 2024, 4 years prior, it's 46%. Today, as we're recording this in April, it's higher, but it was 46% over the last 4 years, compound annual growth rate of Bitcoin. So if somebody puts their savings in something like that, and they hold it in something like that over 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, if someone takes out a calculator right now on their iPhone and they put in 1,000 and you multiply, you hit times and you go times 1.46, not that it would keep growing at a compound annual growth rate of 46%. I have no way of guaranteeing that, but just for fun, if you hit the equal sign one time and then you hit the equal sign 10 times and you look at that number on your iPhone or on your phone, like that is the potential that Bitcoin has for you, that it's going to increase your purchasing power in the world. And I believe it removes a lot of society's pains, a lot of the pointing fingers, a lot of the populism, a lot of the things that I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that we're hinting at here, and a lot of the finger pointing. And that people can be self-reliant. And then I also believe if someone like Emma can save in Bitcoin, we get a wise elder. That when Emma, you're very young right now, but when you're, you know, many years from now, if you save in Bitcoin, you will have the time to be able to go around and share your wisdom at places like universities in Canada and in the US. And I feel like as a society, we've lost the wise elder. We have lost the wise elder. Nobody can afford retirement. So we put people up in this area in retirement homes. Everyone's desperate to pay, take equity from your home. Hopefully you can get a spot. Can you imagine we had a whole generation of Emmas as wise elders to pass down decades of education to the younger generation? Like, how beautiful of a world would that be? And I know it's coming because I know you're saving in Bitcoin. So like that to me is a bright future. If the next few years looks a little scary to a lot of people, and it does, to me, the next 20, 25, 30 years looks like it could be incredible. And when I see people like yourself entering this world, honestly, it just gives me such hope. So for me, it's, you know, Bitcoin is many things. And for me, it's just this like ray of hope, you know? So anyway, I didn't mean to go on a little bit of a rant or whatever, but that's what I see when you're speaking. You know, I'm like, holy smokes, the opportunity here, like this is huge. It's realigning all of our incentives. You know, and then someone like you is motivated to talk about it. Someone like me is motivated to talk to it. It's just wonderful. We each talk to it from our own voices, you from public health, me from real estate and a store of value kind of angle. So it's just kind of like this wonderful thing. I know I get crazy on this stuff, but anyway, so it's just great to talk to you about this stuff, Emma. So, and I'm very thankful that you're finding your voice and your niche here in this space so that you can spend more time. It's exciting. And that can be difficult to do. And it seems like you're crafting it out and you're carving it out. And so that could be also very stressful. So good on you for going through this, you know?
Well, thank you so much. I think your prior point was eloquently said. If people can get on a Bitcoin standard and we get more people, families, young people, then there'll be just a brighter future. Is Bitcoin, as you know, in the space, you know, we say Bitcoin fixes this. and, you know, it will fix a lot of things. Is it going to create a perfect world? No. But as we know, we can do better, and Bitcoin is better, right? It's better money. It just, as you said, it better aligns incentives at the individual and organizational and governmental level as well too, right? So I'm really excited for the future.
Yeah, I can't. You're up to great stuff. I can't wait to see how your next 10 years evolves. You know, I'm excited to see what you do because it's going to be great. So if anyone wanted to follow what you're doing, I know the website, so that we will put into the show notes for sure. Are you also anywhere else? Can anyone follow you on any other social platforms or not so much? Are you not on those platforms right now?
Primarily on Dream Grad Academy. And the handle is without the A in grad, because as you know, on X, you know, you have a character limit. So I had to drop something. So Dream Grad Academy with no A in the grad. And LinkedIn, I've been posting there.
Under your name, I guess?
Yep. Under Emma Patu on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay, so we'll have links to all of this. If anyone's listening to this and wants to track you down, we will have links to all of these places on the show notes for this particular episode. And then Emma, is there anything, I mean, there's more we can discuss in at deeper levels, but I think as an introduction to you, this has been fantastic. So thank you. But is there anything else lingering that you really wanted to get out that we haven't touched?
I would just say, if I can speak to my fellow public health, healthcare professionals, that we really need to look deeper at money itself. And I just encourage people to read books like Saif Edeem Amous, The Fiat Standard, to just learn more about money. Because a lot of the things that we're calling for in public health is downstream of money. And if we can have more people that are Bitcoin advocates in the public health space, I think that would be very, very helpful. So I would just end by saying, you know, debt-based money is a public health issue and we need to recognize it as such.
Yeah. Awesome. Emma, real pleasure doing this together with you. And at one point, if you listen, just by your background, you're in a better spot than I'm in right now. So if you ever come back up here, we definitely want to have you in person. So open invitation to come here in person. But if you don't come to this area, I won't blame you either. You know, so.
I had a question for you. Are you going to the conference in May, the Bitcoin conference in Montreal?
I'm
going to
go for the Friday only. We have a big family get together because that's the May 2 4 long weekend here. So we have a big family thing happening, but I am going to pop in for the Friday. Are you going to be there?
Yes, I will be there. Okay. Yeah. And I'll be participating in a panel. I believe it's on the Thursday for like a Bitcoin 101 event. There's going to be other women there and other great speakers and industry partners. So I would just also encourage anyone listening to consider going to the Bitcoin conference in Montreal. In May.
Awesome. Yeah. So I was going to say, if you're on a panel, I'm going to heckle you. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do it. I just like saying that, you know, I'll heckle you just for fun, but I would never do that. I would never do that. So that's great that you're participating in that. So yeah, Canadian Bitcoin Conference in May. I don't have the exact date handy, but I know it's the May 2-4 long weekend, the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of that kind of weekend. I also know there's a big hockey game between Canadian Bitcoiners and American Bitcoiners being organized. And, last year's was great. This year's, there are some heavy hitters like you're speaking there. There are other great speakers going to be there. So if you're local in Canada and you want to get exposure to some of the Bitcoin community, that's going to be a great place. So I think Nick and I are both going to pop in for the Friday. But
it's great. Awesome. Just to let you know, it's May 16th to the 18th.
Oh, perfect. May 16th to 18th. Thank you. We're going to be talking more about that. We have a guest coming up, I think, next week to talk about more about the Canadian Bitcoin Conference. So we'll be harping on that a little bit more. But awesome, Emma. Thank you so much for doing this. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Tom.
Hey, everyone. Hopefully you enjoyed that chat with Dr. Emma Apatu. And her main website would be dreamgradacademy.com. That's dreamgradacademy.com. You can find her there. And all the different URLs that she shared on the episode, including Bitcoin Mentor and Bitcoin is Better, are all linked on the show notes of this particular episode. So you can find them there. And if you are listening to this and you want to join a community of people who are learning about all these subjects, you can check out the Rockstar Inner Circle membership by visiting rockstarinnercircle.com/members. That's rockstarinnercircle.com/members. That's it for this episode. Until next time, your life, your terms.